This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It was another big reveal this week for Ford, which introduced the world to its new Maverick. Smaller than the electric F-150 Lightning and a hybrid, it suggests a pile of new possibilities for an iconic Michigan brand and, oh, by the way, the global leader in light trucks. We could not help but wonder what Sonari Glinton thought of it. We love his takes on all things, but most especially on cars. Host of the podcast Now What's Next, you will also fondly remember his podcast Bring Back Bronco and his years covering Detroit and the Big Three for public radio. Sonari, welcome back to Stateside.
It is good to be with you. It's good to be anywhere.
You're right. Happy 2021. So what do you think of this Maverick?
Well, it's interesting because it's funny that if you thought about the car companies, I always thought it was a misnomer to call them car companies because a company like Ford gets at least 90% of its profits from the F-Series trucks. So if you thought about it, it's like they were never really good at actually making cars, or at least in the last 40 years. So why not, instead of making a meh small car, make a great small truck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it has a lot of implications, as you pointed to in your intro, of what this could mean about fuel economy, about jobs in Detroit, about the overall economy of the country.
I believe I saw the other day that the Lightning already has 100,000 pre-orders in. Do you think the people like it, this idea about an electric truck?
Well, I think what's more important is to think about, you know, Tesla. I'm here in West Hollywood, you know, right below the Hollywood Hills. So I see Teslas as much as I see Malibus, right? As you might see Malibus. But what's interesting is that the strategy of Tesla, they're still kind of in the fancy places. You know, you got to go to Troy to see it. But there's a Ford dealership essentially in every congressional district, right? And so what that means is that people who haven't gotten into an electric car might actually get to see one, test drive one. And that is meaningful for the overall adoption rate of these vehicles.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was delighted to see in the Maverick rollout the luminous smile of Gabrielle Union as pitch woman. Nice look, Ford.
Well, you know, car companies have a lot of money to throw at this. But we know what's interesting about that is that I think we kind of think of pickup trucks because if you watch football, you think that, you know,
Sam Elliott, one. Clint Eastwood. Yeah. These are the actors that the industry has turned to in the past.
Yeah. I mean, one, of course, women watch football. A lot of them do. But even more importantly, women buy pickup trucks. And women lead auto dissensions. And Gabrielle Union and a smaller pickup truck is yet another way for Ford to go after. I mean, in the U.S., it's a female market, but globally, it's the market.
Well, and maybe a black market, too. I noticed that Ford chose Idris Elba, renowned actor and my future husband, to helm a commercial for the Mach-E when they were doing the new Mustang rollout. I mean, Sonari, there was a time when a car company might shoot several versions of a car commercial with actors of different ethnicities, and they'd program the one with the black actress during Scandal when it was on TV and put the one with the Latino family on Universo. But I mean, does anything feel different here about putting a different face on the global brand for such a high-profile product?
Well, one of the things that we realized, I did a Planet Money about this, about Tom Burrell, who put black folks in advertising. O.J. Simpson was one of the first pitchmen for the auto industry.
Oh.
But one of the interesting things globally is that I always point out is that in my podcast, we note the billions of dollars that Hollywood loses by not thinking about black and brown folks. And I say this to my friends in public radio all the time, 44% in the world speaks English. If you've seen the Commonwealth, you know what they look like.
Yeah.
They look more like Meghan than they do like Harry. He understands that. And that's true. I mean, it's just like, if you're going to talk to people, you have to appeal to them where they're at. You know, if you put Idris Elba on an ad, you got the entire continent of Africa, you got Brazil, you got the black diaspora. And here's the thing that's interesting about it. White people respond more to black people in ads than just the generic ad that is aimed at the larger white audience. It's just that we forget these things when it comes to race. every time we have instant amnesia about actual facts. Yeah. So
like there's a reaction there that's sort of aspirational in the way that sometimes we see Black candidates put up as candidates within the Republican Party, not necessarily because the party thinks they're going to attract Black voters, but because they think they're going to attract white voters who really want to vote for a candidate of color.
Yeah, I mean, but let's put it this way. When Idris Elba came into NPR West, and Renee Montagne, to this day, if you just called her up, she would talk about it right now. Like, and Renee, who has a car that literally, she is an anti-car user driver. She has a 1980 Mercedes. She is hardcore car person. She would faint. She might think about driving an e-car because it's just Elba. So you get Renee Montagne and you get Black folks and you get me if you put Idris Elba out there. Do you get what I'm saying?
Totally. Let's dork out on the Maverick a little bit more. Sonari, who has been the market for mini trucks in the past? I mean, there's some people who have very warm feelings for mini trucks out there.
Well, I would say the real market that I see is, again, one of the markets is I'm here in Southern California, and I always joke that this truck at about $20,000, when people say that an F-150 is a working man's truck, come on.
Mm-mm.
Like, really, y'all? Because you know what I'm talking about. You see, you live in Ann Arbor. You drive, you know, you drive the, you know, Arbor Sling Road. You know it's the boss who's in the F-150, right? That is, the crew cab car never has the crew in it.
But then what is the point of a mini truck? It can't tow like an F-150. The bed is so much smaller. I mean, is this just an optics truck?
No, it's working, folks. Mm-hmm. If those of us who remember when Toyota just had a truck called Truck Toyota, it eventually became the Tacoma, 75% of those trucks are still on the road. The pool guy going up the Hollywood Hills is not taking an F-250. Please, can't even park that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to modify a $50,000 truck, but you might put some wood on the back of a $20,000 one that gets 40 miles a gallon. I mean, like, I think actual people who actually do real jobs might be able to afford this car and use it. And then there are those of us who can't afford a big truck, but we, you know, we have stuff to do. I think that this is a lot of moms. This is a lot of working folks. And that's where this market is when you look at where that Toyota small truck still remains. It's, you know, people are working these things into the ground. And I think Ford, Toyota, and the other companies are seeing an opportunity, though the Maverick only has one real competitor, and that's Hyundai in this very small market.
Are you at all curious yourself about these electric trucks? I hear that the Lightning is just a beast. I mean, just a very large, very fast, very powerful truck. Do either of these, either that or the Maverick, appeal to you at all?
Well, once you have driven an electric car, it's almost impossible to go back. I'm always stunned by the low adoption rate. So this is really important. Very few people are driving these things yet. Mm-hmm. And over 100 cars or trucks are coming to the market in the next 18 months or so. That's going to be a real problem. But once you get into one, once you've bought one, it's really rare for someone to be like, now I'm going to go stand in the rain or the cold to, you know, like... Or you realize like, oh, I had a plug-in hybrid and I never had to plug it in. I never used the gas. So to me, I would have never thought about a pickup truck until you go, oh, it's electric. And I think there's a market in there. And then there's the, I don't want the giant pickup truck, but I do haul stuff. And I do want a flatbed that does something.
Yeah.
I can really imagine that. And it's for 20 grand. That's something that is way more approachable, and the fuel economy of not having to like put a mortgage payment into your gas tank. I mean, I think that that's what it's going to end up being. Where Ford aims a car, or where these company aim cars, are not necessarily where they land. That shit, that this car will be rolling around in the Hollywood Hills this truck for decades and decades.
If you're just joining us today, I'm talking with Sonari Glinton. He is the host of Now What's Next, the podcast, and has on and off over the years spent a great deal of time covering the car industry. Sonari, you've got this extensive history of looking at cars, you know, through a critical lens and so much time with it. I mean, folks in your family, including your mom, worked for Ford for a lot of years, and you definitely have some affinity to cars generally. And you also see this stuff through the lens of being a Black man and a gay man. Do you think that the auto industry, and we don't have to lump them all in together, but do you think they're thinking earnestly about broadening the market? For years, like the only car affiliation I can think of in which automakers were approaching LGBTQ world was Subaru, that proudly embraced the affiliation that a lot of lesbians had for it. You know, it was like the oldest Subaru story in the book, the golden retriever in the back and two women in the front. Do you think things are changing?
Well, I'll point to something that might not seem direct, which is General Motors going to work from home, okay? Now, that announcement, zero chance that that would have happened pre-pandemic.
Right.
GM stuns me in terms of just like going into their offices as being at times as having been just backwards in general. Over the last 6 years with, you know, what many people think is one of the most effective CEOs in America who's pushing the company forward, it does have an affinity group. It has been advertising. That's one of the biggest car companies on the planet. I've always thought about this when talking to people about it. It's like, if you have a 1950s structure to your company, you're not going to like somehow smack diversity onto it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if you're still running your company like it did in 1962, then that's what some of the problem is you go to the auto show and you see people in suits and you're like, why? I mean, that just shows, like, where am I going to go? Where am I going to feel comfortable? I can work from home. I can wear my t-shirt. I don't have to do this or this or this. That's just the sign of what, and part of what the big car companies need to do is that they need that engineering heft. They need to compete with the big companies. And honestly, it's like all shoulders at the wheel. But, you know, like Mary Barr is one of the most effective people in the industry. They care about it, the survival of it. You know, Jim Farley is like a fourth generation person. And I think that they get enough about the future to know that you need all the engineers, you need all the minds to solve these big problems like adaption of electric vehicles, of autonomy. You cannot meet the challenges that Detroit needs without all of the people. And I think that some of the companies are beginning, like just beginning. I'm not giving them credit because these are many companies that, you know, General Motors, historically known for its racism, Ford, historically known for its anti-Semitism, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they have done things that have been writ large bad in the world that they have to atone for. But these companies, you see that the market is too big to ignore. Green is too bright of a color sometimes to ignore. I mean, people ignore it all the time. They do all the time, but I think that this is the beginning.
So, do you remember Car Talk?
Of course I did. I worked at WBUR with both Click and Clack.
Tom and Ray back in the day. I remember one time they had listeners write in for the ultimate gay and lesbian cars of all time. And I just looked it up before we were talking. The Ford F-150 made their list. It was like number four.
Well, you know what? The practicality of it.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I always think, especially about gay folks. I mean, we do the people talk about the stereotypes of West Hollywood. I live in West Hollywood, but I also lived at one point in Michigan, and I used to go to the Necto on Friday nights, right? Gay folks, you know, people would drive for 2 hours, you know, people coming from Jackson and far away to come to that night. That was one of the places I realized, like, oh yeah, that's right. We think about the gay folks in West Hollywood and New York and those places get the coverage, but it's likely, you know, the gay person who's working at the salon, taking care of his parents, you know, getting things done, raising his or her family that are all out in the country. And that's like a thing that I always have to remind myself because Fire Island seems like where it's at. But when you realize that actually most gay folks just live where most folks live.
What are you driving these days?
I am loving the fact of being a carless car reporter in Los Angeles.
Oh, that's so meta.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what I am not is a car enthusiast. It is cars put me through school. My mom worked for Ford for 30 years. My father died in a car accident. Right? You know, like, so there's always the push and pull of what cars being the necessary evil. I love them. I loathe them. And I really am interested right now, especially during the pandemic, in getting to know my town and city and getting on an electric bike, which I literally just ordered. I mean, I'm going to buy a car in a few weeks, but it's been a year of not driving a car, and it's been really amazing to get around, and it's not nearly as hard as Angelenos or Detroiters might think.
Right. Good luck finding one. I hear the market, especially if you're looking for something new or used, is brutal. Have you seen any leads?
No deals, because we have to remember that the month of May was a record year for companies like Honda, and Toyota has like about a little over a week lead time. And I'm thinking a lot of the car companies in Michigan might not have their summer breaks. Like, because that's how much demand there is. So if they're being a little mean to you on the dealer lots, there's a reason. That's a sign of a good economy.
Sonari, if we can just circle back to the Maverick and the electric truck movement a little bit. Everybody has been cheering that this is going to be a whole new era for Ford, new era. Have you looked any closer into what this might mean for Ford's truck business in Michigan?
Well, what's interesting about it is that it's going to be made in Mexico. But what's interesting about it is that this is an inexpensive car, and it may not have been able to be built in where they're building like the Bronco or the F-150 or one of those vehicles. Interestingly, this announcement coming out, you cannot imagine that this announcement would have come out, you know, in the previous administration. It would have been a hotbed political issue. It is not now. Notice.
What a difference a year makes.
Exactly. So what it really is that Ford needs to have vehicles that are aimed at other markets, and it needs to have a use for those plants that are in Mexico. And having a car that is looking for, I mean, I think really the market is Latin America, and that's why building it in Mexico makes sense. The Ford Focus is one of the top selling cars on the globe, right? But you can't find one now, really. So outside of the U.S., very different tastes, and this is trying to meet both of those. You got trucks in the F-150, like doing gangbusters, being built in Detroit already. There's no lack of, at this actual moment, in trucks being built. That might be interesting as negotiations go on and in the next round for the UAW.
Sonari Glinton is a former Michigander, longtime Angeleno, host of the podcast Now What's Next, which is an awesome mix of informative and fun, and always and forever our top car gay. Sonari, thank you.
Thank you. Go Blue.